Welcome to The B Word, the show where we demystify everything to do with B2B branding to get to the heart of what it really is, how it works, and why it matters for B2B businesses today. My name is Farah Darvill, Growth Director, Branding Agency, Design by Structure, and your host for today's episode. Joining me today is Candice Van Ostrom, Head of Design for US-based Temporal Technologies, a brand that's taking something as serious as reliability and turning it into culture and brand promise, from dinosaurs to tardigrades. This is how they've made brand magic in the world of code, making it as reliable as gravity. So welcome, Candice, and thank you for joining me today.
Oh my God, thank you for having me.
Okay, let's get into it. For anyone who's new to Temporal Technologies, tell us what you do, what the business is about, and who you do it for.
Absolutely. Temporal is an open source developer tools project that guarantees that your applications are fail-proof. So how does it work? You write your applications using our open source software development kits, and the Temporal platform, which you can host or we can host, preserves the exact state of your code and picks up right where it left off in the case of any failures. This could be an API outage, a network outage, a bug in your code, you name it. And so what this means is developers no longer have to code for all the possible failure scenarios. We just take care of that for you. In fact, we make failures irrelevant. So who do we do this for? We serve developers, forward deployed engineers, platform engineers, architects, SREs, I mean, really anyone that has mission critical workloads where reliability is non-negotiable. And what do? I lead design across the entire spectrum at Temporal, from our product experience to our brand and growth initiatives. So my role is a bit unique in that I bridge both worlds, ensuring our developer tool is intuitive and powerful while building a brand that makes complex technical concepts accessible. I mean, we're solving reliability problems for some of the world's most critical applications, so our designs need to convey a sense of technical excellence and trustworthiness.
I want to kickstart today's conversation with is the idea of reliable as gravity, because you've taken the word reliability and you turned it into a brand promise. So for you guys, it's not a product feature, it's sort of the backbone of your brand. And you take trustworthiness, especially for the skeptical developer, people perhaps who've been burned before, and you make it reliable. So I kind of want to know, why is that so central to what you do and how did it start?
I mean, reliable as gravity is really a cultural value. And I helped frame this with Sommer, our CEO and co-founder, in the early days of the company, because it so perfectly encapsulates what we do. I mean, what's more reliable than gravity in our universe? That's how reliable we are. Yeah. We're always there, just like gravity. And so I think, you know, to your question, which is great about the skeptical, you know, engineer who's been burned before. I mean, when working in the B2B space, especially in the developer tool ecosystem, especially when your product is open source, we have to be incredibly explicit and transparent in how we describe the product. I mean, they can just look at the code and call you out. And, you know, we get absolutely nowhere misrepresenting the product, because then you're in a win back, and that, you know, that's a very expensive path. And I think it's just so unfortunate how commonplace it is for companies to say that their product does A, B, and C, and, you know, developers get started and find out it kind of does A and B, but definitely doesn't do C. So they built up this, you know, healthy skepticism to ward off and not believe or trust, you know, new people who come up and make these big grandiose claims like we do. But my POV on that, you know, is that there's only really one anecdote, which is to let them get their hands on the code as quickly as possible and then get out of their way. They're not going to believe anything we say anyways until they see the code. They're going to trust the code, and we have nothing to hide.
Yeah. And I like the idea around healthy skepticism, because that means there's definitely some room for maneuver in here once they get their hands on the code. And is that how you build the trust?
Yeah, I could tell them everything. They're going to say... Yeah, right. Right. Like they're not really going to believe us. They think it sounds like magic. And so we just have to really get their hands on the code and let them find out for themselves.
And I love that, is that there's no hiding from these guys, right? Because this is what they do every day. They, you know, they look, they compare, they contrast. So there's no hiding.
No, and they're so good at it, right? I mean, if you really, you know, unlock and understand the developer mindset, they really take pride in staying up to date on the latest trends. Like, they're on Hacker News. Like, they're passionate about this. This is what their craft is. So they get really good at sussing out the imposters from the real deal. And there's just, you know, unfortunately been so many people who've made claims that they couldn't back up, that their default position now is to not trust anything.
And does that mean that, because obviously you're constantly revising, testing your product, is there a moment where keeping the brand promise has meant you had to say no to something else, and potentially that could be you could have been asked to explore it, or it just came up naturally and organically? Is that a reality that you have to say no or not for now?
For sure. I mean, we have to be extremely vigilant about what we say yes and no to. I mean, we really want to say yes to as many things as possible. You never know what might work out really well or what you might learn. My CMO, Claire Bird, is an absolute legend. You know, she makes incredible choices every day. But, you know, saying no, while unpopular, I mean, I call this breaking hearts. But we have to take our brand positioning as the most reliable foundation in your developer toolkit seriously and say no sometimes. Yeah. But I find more than like the shiny object or the distraction, like my LT is very steadfast and they don't get swayed very easily. So I actually find that it's the product designers who are saying no more often. And we do a lot of defending of the brand, you know, in R&D, working with product and engineering. And that no sounds like, no, that's too complicated. No, that's too many steps. No, this would be too confusing. And the no is more of like, come on, let fill your boots, pull up your socks. Let's get at this again. Because, you know, for me, the brand, like that is, the no is protecting what we ship to developers and making sure that it hits our bar, right? The way that what they touched. And, you know, to me, that's, if that's not the brand, what is, right?
Exactly.
And we have to maintain a very high bar. And so it's not easy. It takes craft and grit and trust and teamwork.
You used the word magic, and it is the spooky season. I want to talk a little bit about that, because you said that developers say when they actually get their hands on the code, they say it's like magic. And you talked about your brand archetype as the magician. And that the idea for me is like making the complex as simple as possible and effortless. How did that come about? And how does that shape your visual and verbal world?
Yeah, you know, it honestly really just fell in our lap. When engineers first come to us, you know, years ago and even now, at trade shows or on our website, temporal.io, and read about what we do, again, their skeptical insights are like, instincts are like, yeah, right, no way, that sounds like magic. And, you know, I kept hearing that, and like that would be shared internal channels from different states or countries or different events. And I thought, hey, I think there's something there. And I thought, it's like, what if we just called it out?
And said, yeah,
what you're feeling is totally normal. Absolutely. Like, yes. And so we had this already, this brand tagline, you know, build invincible apps, which is great. So we then paired it with, it sounds like magic, we promise it's not. And then that was a real unlock for us. And so I went back, you know, the design team, we picked up the brand tone and voice, and we started looking at, you know, who are we? What do we sound like? Where does this go? And so we were looking at archetypes, and we landed on the magician. The magician manifests ideas into reality, transforming this earthly plane for good. Yeah. The magician gets results outside of the ordinary rules of life. The magician is a trusted advisor in a chaos or a crisis situation. And, you know, the magician is also in the same family as the engineer. I mean, so just the synergy, it was just there. And we said, oh my God, this is it. And so then we started playing that and said, okay, well, what would that look like? What would that sound like as an awareness play? And so we said, okay, what does a magician, like, who are the magicians? Who do we know? Who can we pull on? What does that sound like? And so, you know, a magician would say, hey, you know, step right up, Do you want to see me saw this person in half? And you're just walking down, you know, with your pumpkin spice latte and you're like not thinking about that. And then you go, oh, I mean, I wasn't planning on seeing somebody be sawed in half, but I kind of want it now.
Yeah.
And so we want to do the same thing, like this sort of sideways attack of a thought-provoking question. Mm-hmm. And so we landed on, like we worked with, again, some education folks and engineers in the company. They helped shape this tagline, what if your code never failed? And then we start putting that in market. And we put that on event, like event booths. And people just walk up to us and go, what do you mean? What do you mean if my code never failed? Of course my code's going to fail. And then we tell them and they go, that sounds like magic. And then we're full circle.
How do you keep magic without slipping into potentially gimmicky territory? Yeah. How do you keep that balance?
Because temporal actually works every time, all the time, you know, we get to have some fun with it. Like we get to be a bit off center and a bit punk and a bit silly and a bit unexpected, all in service of delighting our, you know, community in an authentic way. But I think, you know, the sort of keeping it real, like being explicit about how the, and not misrepresenting the product, keeps us from going into gimmicky territories.
Yeah.
Like it still has to be technically correct.
Absolutely. And so this kind of leads us in beautifully to the what I'm calling the humanity of brand and something we've talked about before, because it's very close to our hearts. We work with a lot of technology businesses. And one of the things we have discovered in that journey is that there's people. So you have a product and it does great things and it'll change your business life, etc. But there's always a person. It's the person who's behind the brand and it's the person, the end user, the end customer. And then when we think about developers in particular, you know, they're not faceless. They're like, and we've talked about this, you know, they're musicians, they're gamers, they're creators. And so your brand reflects humanity. It's humorous, it's authentic. So, and also what I love, and you said it earlier, you use everyday language. So you say things like, you know, failure sucks, but we can fix that.
Yeah.
And then and also with your events, and we're going to talk about the big one as well in a minute, you have the t-shirts, the dinosaurs, and the tardigrade. And I have devoted a section to Ziggy because, you know, I'm madly in love with Ziggy. So I guess my question is, how does humor and humanity matter in the B2B world?
Yeah. You know, I think that there's a very real pull in the B2B world to be super serious because we're talking about people who are using this tool to perform their job duties. And like, yeah, that's true. But for me, it really falls apart once you start talking and getting to know your users. And again, like you said, realizing that they're human beings. I mean, our users are incredible and diverse. They're fully formed people with passions and interests and skill. Like you said, name it. You'll find developers who love doing it. Yeah. I mean, because they're humans and they're cool and we love them. And I can tell you that when we pour some love and silliness into a thing for the sake of just doing something for the community, they go nuts for it. So you mentioned the t-shirt. You know, we were designing our first sort of swag t-shirt to give. We started doing, you know, trade shows. And, you know, the team was just like, I really don't want to have to design a black t-shirt with the white logo on the front. And so we were talking about like, well, what could we do that people, like mass people would like? And one of my wonderful brand designers had this great idea of like, what if we made it like a concert t-shirt? What if we put all of our, you know, because we are technically going on tour, we're going to all these different trade shows. We put those on the back and then we made it like a concert t-shirt. And we're like, yeah, I mean, everyone likes a concert t-shirt. Sure, go for it. And so they had this like, found this incredible, you know, metal type. So like temporal, these are on the front, there's like a skull and it's a 3/4 inch sleeve. Anyway, it's just like a cool rock, like metal t-shirt. And it has nothing to do with anything. Right. It's just this t-shirt. And we didn't know if it was going to work or not, or what the response was going to be. And I think that was like 2 or 3 years ago, and we can't keep it in stock. Like it flies off the rack. Like every event, the employees that are manning the booth always are putting like, yep, t-shirts are gone. Like everyone's raving about them. Everyone loved them. You get like, we keep reordering them. And when I think about like, why did that work so well? You know, we weren't designing a t-shirt for us. Mm-hmm. We were designing it for them.
Yeah.
Right. This wasn't for us. And we put our love into like something that would be, they would be cool. And I think, you know, we're a tech company and a metal t-shirt has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
Right. But it just was authentic, and it's a thing that we did so that they would like it.
Yeah.
And we just want to keep, so then that works. So now we just keep doing more and more. And I think when we, you know, think about the perception of what a B2B brand can and cannot do, I think we have to keep pushing the boundaries. You know, these users are navigating like Uber and Uber Eats and, or DoorDash or Netflix or, you know, all these others, B2C apps.
Yeah.
And like, we're just one of many tabs. Like, and, you know, so UX is a commodity now. And I think we have to challenge the perception that just because it's for work or just because you have to use it for your work doesn't mean it needs to be sterile.
Yes.
Like the assumption that, you know, people who are working in technology deserve less, I think is wrong.
And you, what you've done is, there's a couple of words, and I love it. You're like tech punks. And as we've been talking, I just keep writing this down there, the punks of technology. Tech.
Mm-hmm.
But you've tapped into culture and you've tapped into behaviors. So it's that thing about knowing who your audience is, knowing what they're into, and actually being brave enough to not wear the T-shirt with the insignia and the name and, you know,
the website and the QR
and the
code.
Website.
Yeah.
And to move away from that completely and go, no, this is how we're turning up today.
Yeah.
And also what you're saying is it's about you. It's not about us. It's about
correct.
You. And I absolutely love that. And I guess when I think about tech businesses and I think about language, and I wonder, and I don't know how you feel about this, that a lot of tech businesses, well, they hide behind technical language. How do you strike that balance between sort of clarity and simplicity, but without dumbing it down so that they feel like, hang on, you're talking down to me now. No, don't do that.
Yeah. And, you know, this is it's a hard one, and we're still working on it. Like, this isn't always on. Like, we're never going to, you know, wave the banner on that, I think. I think, you know, the further out we are, say, in our awareness play, like, the more high level and broad we are, like, say that, you know, what if your code never failed? I mean, that really doesn't say or explain anything, right? But it gets you in. And then we use, you know, progressive disclosure to sort of, you know, explain, you know, add more, you know, word salad to explain
word salad.
How, you know, how it works and the deeper you dive into it. And, you know, as a company principle, not even a brand principle, like, this pre-exists me, that we will never dumb down how we talk about temporal, how we explain it, or how we build the features. We will never misrepresent the complexity or the capabilities of it. And we'll never insult the intelligence of our community. Mm-hmm. Now, will we go 102 rounds to make it more, you know, clearer, more concise, and technically correct? Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, if it's a lot, we say it's a lot. And if this is how it works, this is how it works. You know, temporal is a beast. There's so much you can learn and geek out on, and we love that for you.
Yeah. And again, it's knowing your customer, understanding behaviors, understanding what they're looking at, what they need to know, and meeting them at that level. This kind of leads me in quite nicely. It was something you said before, and I wanted to kind of talk to you about it more. You said about when you'd started at Temporal, you working with the co-founders, you stripped the brand back to black and white to find mm-hmm. out what it was, and you talked about sort of taking a giant leap. So I'd just like to explore that a bit more. What did you mean about it, and what did that look like? And
yeah, so I joined Temporal in, at the end of Series A, and like before. By the time I started, we basically, you know, finished the round for Series B and was working on the announcement. And, you know, so I was new. I was trying to understand what this company was and how it worked. And I had no clue. I couldn't put my finger on it. I had no intuition for it. I didn't know what it was. I had inherited the logo in a brand guideline that they had previously outsourced. And I liked some of it. Like, the logo shield is great.
Yeah.
But the colors, I couldn't use it. They weren't accessible. I couldn't put that in the product. So I didn't really know what to do with that. I didn't know what the company was, but I knew I had to redesign the website ASAP.
So that's your hub. That's your core. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I tapped into my agency days and said, okay, let's come up with some concepts, right? And so I did, working with, you know, Charles Zadlewski, our CPO at the time, and Ryland Goldstein, our head of product, you know, was trying to come up with these different concepts. Well, not even understanding what Temporal was at all. And, you know, and admittedly, these concepts felt really forced and unnatural and gimmicky. and they weren't working. Okay. And, you know, I remember, so Charles had this really great insight that, you know, the brand should really reflect the voice of our co-founders.
Okay.
And Max Fatiev was our co-founder and CEO at the time. He's now our CTO. You know, so I started observing him and you know, watching him and listening to how he spoke. And I was watching videos that he'd put online. And I just adore this man. And he very quickly realized he speaks in absolutes. So he says things like, you can absolutely do that. Or he'll say, no, you can absolutely not do that. Like there's no gray area. It works or it doesn't.
Okay. Right? Okay.
You can do it this way or that. He is very black and white. And I was like, okay, how about this? So I went back to Charles and I said, hey, we already had a website. We already had some assets. So what if we just strip it down to the studs and tear it all down? And we're just black and white, big, bold typography, big, bold statements. We're going to be Max. You know, we'll try it out. Wow. And let's not force this and let's not try to make decisions that I don't understand in a box in it right now, because it'll be wrong, right? And it's harder to undo and defend. And thankfully, you know, he was game, and we had a lot of great prior art. There's tons of great brands that are in black and white that we could poke at and look at and riff off of. And so the risk was more of like, I don't know what this brand is. I don't know where it's going. I don't really know what the path is to find out, but I think it'll take 2 years.
Wowza.
And I think we should just feel our way through it and test and learn and not try and force a decision that isn't an obvious yes. And thankfully, about 2 years. And it's these things sound so obvious, but like these decisions about, you know, the brand and the tone of voice and our take, but that's come through an organic experience of us doing the work and getting the feel for it and really understanding it. And so I'm very grateful that we didn't try and force a redesign in a brand in a couple of weeks when I knew nothing, that we took the time and tried it out to get to it.
And it's incredible that you actually have given the brand space, because it's one of those things when we're working on brands with clients, it isn't like, ta-da! You've got to give it breathing space. You've got to get under the skin of it and understand what it is, what it's going to want, and more importantly, sort of what it's going to become. And you won't always hit that straight away. Sometimes you're in a sort of a, this is our jumping off space, and I think this is where you're going to go. But there's a lot of dependence on that. So I think it's really interesting that you actually, from the get-go, kind of said, we need space to do this.
Yeah. You know, and it's hard, right? Because you're expected to know.
Yeah, yeah.
Your job? You don't know?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. What do you mean? Why did I hire you? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that's what we get when we come in and they're like, well, you're the brand experts. And?
Yeah, right?
Well, we got to do some talking. We got to do some research. We got to talk to your clients.
There's building a PDF and then there's building a brand.
Absolutely. I think that's so interesting. And I think that was really brave. And I love the support you've had as well. And so that is your leap of faith, because you've had a team behind you going, we can do this. So you've gone through the 2-year journey. You started to build a culture about the brand internally and externally. And I know we've spoken about this before, but developers, they thrive on sort of openness and transparency and problem sharing. And you've tapped into that, giving space for people to connect with the Replay conference. And I feel like it's become a creative community and it's built a very distinct culture for you guys. How did that evolve? And was it intentional or was it organic?
I think, you know, the spirit of injecting play and silliness into the most reliable company, you know, started at the very beginning, but it was definitely not intentional. That was nobody's plan, right? We were getting ready to, you know, host our first user conference, which would look like, hey, we're going to do a user conference. Get a website up. I'm like, oh, what's the...
Yay.
Cool. All right. So it didn't have a name. We didn't have a location, but it was in 3 months. And, you know, startup life. And so I said, okay. And I was a team of one at the time. So I was designing this event page, and I thought, okay, it's going to be like Temporal User Conference or something in Seattle. So I grabbed some like 3D mesh models of like the Space Needle and some other landmarks in Seattle. And then I just like had nothing. I had no idea what this was. So I just started putting like little pigeons around the floor and the ground. And then I drew a boy playing fetch with his dog. And then I put some trees in. And then I snuck a few pterodactyls in. And
it, the way you do.
You know, I just started sneaking dinosaurs in to see like if anyone would notice, and nobody noticed. And then during that period of time, we got a name, and the name was Replay. And I was like, oh, great. And an action word. So I have to like toss out these wonderful designs and start from scratch. And again, still very new at the company. And so Ryland, who's Ryland Goldstein, incredibly intelligent and wonderful person, was explaining to me that like what we call Replay at Temporal is the mechanism which we deliver durable execution. It's like how we pick up exactly where, your code was left off. And so that's Replay. And sort of the way he explained it, and because I was already in the mindset of dinosaurs, I think I said something like he explained this very technical concept to me. And I said, right, so we could go back in time and save the dinosaurs. And I think he kind of blinked and was like, I mean, I think like technically that's like the correct concept. And it's like, great, hot dog, we're doing dinosaurs. And so we redesigned the whole site as dinosaurs. And of course I had to like reverse engineer, put my creative direction hat on and put reverse engineer a reason why dinosaurs. When I pitched it to Max and Sommer, I was saying, listen, let's not be a boring, stiff tech conference. Mm-hmm. Let's just be the party. Like, our stuff works. We don't have to sell it. Like, let's just have fun. Yeah. We're getting developers together across programming languages, across verticals. And so we went in on the dinosaurs. We had people there wearing dinosaur costumes. People came in the doors and we handed them their T-Rex t-shirt and their sparkly glitter temporary tattoo of a T-Rex. And they were just like, oh, cool. No one was like, this is ridiculous. Why are there dinosaurs here? Right? Nobody said that. And it was a fun day. And people were bumping shoulders and they were relaxed and they were free-forming conversations. And that's what you need for the neurons to create a new path, for ideas to come and to be inspired. And it was such a great day. And so we've just built on that. And so we've done dinosaurs and space skeleton monsters. And like every year we've come up with these really bigger and better themes. And this year we're at Moscone South in San Francisco from May 5th to 7th. And we're coming up with the most incredible sci-fi theme. That's all I'm going to say.
Is that exclusive? Is that an exclusive here on the B word?
Exclusive, yes. You have it. But, it's really about people coming up to us and saying, like, what are you going to do next year? And we've had some people write in and say, hey, listen, I literally physically can't be at the conference, but I want the T-shirt. Can you get me I'll buy a ticket if you give me the T-shirt. We're like, well, no, and it's just, been such a gift that like all these great brands and engineers come and tell their stories about how they're using Temporal or what problems they're solving and what they're seeing. And it's just a fun couple of days where we get to just transport into this new world.
And I love that they just accepted it. They saw a dinosaur and they're like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't? Yeah, tracks.
I think, again, this is tapping into the human side, behavior, understanding that audience, understanding they'll probably be into it. And does the community give you feedback that helps you shape and think what potentially you could be doing next?
I mean, we had... so. I know you want to talk about, but we launched our mascot Ziggy at a Replay, and so we launched Ziggy into space, and we actually had a company that came up to us after and was like, that's cute, we send satellites into space, like, do you want to try, like, we could put Ziggy on a satellite. And so like we get that sort of feedback, like the upper atmosphere, like that's cute, but like, hey, we can help you go the next mile, really wanting us to be successful.
I'm going to talk about Ziggy because Ziggy is the most indestructible brand mascot for, I think, in all of technology. And I think he's probably the most unique in the space. Mm-hmm. I'm just claiming that. Explain to us, first of all, people probably won't know what a tardigrade is, but explain how he came to life.
Sure. I mean, so I was mapping out what all the popular dev tool companies did on their path to becoming ubiquitous. And then I was like, I'm just going to reverse engineer that list and make it my list. And, you know, one thing they all had in common, a lovable mascot. And, you know, our logo is great. I like it. But no one's going to get emotional and get the feel over it, right? It's not something people can really connect with, and that's totally fine. So we said, okay, yes, we need a mascot. We need one sooner rather than later. So the design team started brainstorming, and I think, like, we just immediately fell on a tardigrade. We're all a bunch of nerdy weirdos, and we looked at the tardigrade, and it just checked every single box for us. I mean, it's indestructible. It can survive in space. Temporal is a space brand. It can withstand temperatures up to like 300 degrees Fahrenheit. They can suspend their metabolism for 30 years and rehydrate like nothing happened. And that, like, temporal, you know, your workflows can live for years and, you know, rehydrate and resume. So, like, the parallels were just so incredibly strong. They're the most durable creatures known to mankind. They're weird, nerdy, and awesome. It just, it had to be our mascot. And so, you know, we pitched it to our leadership and our co-founders, and they were trusting, but they had some questions.
They were like, and, okay.
And they, you know, the questions were fair. It was like, do people generally know what a tardigrade is? And my answer was like, they'll find out.
Yeah.
Because everyone should know what a tardigrade is. They're fascinating, and it is so natural. Like, it just felt right. It didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like a stretch. We didn't have to spin it.
Yeah.
So fast forward then to when our CMO, Claire Bird, joined, and she was workshopping the upcoming Replay conference keynote and looking for ideas. And so we were in a room of, you know, all of our engineering lead and product leadership. And she was getting very serious ideas from people. Like, she was getting very dry, serious ideas, and they were great. So just because I'm, you know, shithead or something, I don't know, I said, well, hey, listen, I don't know, what if we sent our mascot into space? And, you know, that was met with some laughter. And Megan MacArthur, you know, one of Max's EA, sent me a Slack message for a company that sends things into space. Like, and I was like, oh. And then I called them, and then I figured out they could do it. And then I was like, hey, Claire, remember when I said that? We should actually do it. She was totally on board. So together we did it. And then in that time, you know, we gave Ziggy the name for Ziggy Stardust, and we sent Ziggy up on a weather balloon up into the, you know, 73 kilometers above the Earth's surface with a Raspberry Pi running a temporal workflow and demonstrated that, like, yeah, you know, when temporal, like, the workflow lost internet connection and then it came back down and resumed and completed. And so it was a perfect marketing stunt that delivered on the brand value and promise. And
amazing.
But the community, you know, our community is, they're intelligent and curious, right? And so people will come up to us at trade shows and they'll see the Ziggy stickers and they'll say, you know, what's that? And we say, that's Ziggy, our tardigrade. It's our mascot. Tardigrades are the only creatures that can survive in the vacuum of space. So can temporal. And they're like, whoa, that's cool. You know, and I think the best moment was I had made an enclosure of the actual Ziggy that went into space with the Raspberry Pi and brought it to a Replay in London and had it on display. And I caught a moment where a father was FaceTiming his daughter, who's a toddler, and explaining and showing her what the mascot stuff, Ziggy stuffy, and explaining what a tardigrade was. And she was like, oh, that's so cool. And I was just like, oh my God, like how great.
It's the unfinally moment of the show. If another brand lead or CMO wanted to build this, the culture you guys have, what's the one thing do you think that they need to get right?
Well, I mean, at first I just want to say how grateful I am for my partnership with my CMO, Claire. But I think in today's world, especially in the age of AI, you need to be brutally honest about who you are and what you are not. I mean, today, I think AI is an incredible accelerator of ideas. Anyone can create anything, but I do believe authenticity will thrive, right? We're living in a moment, like, anyone can generate a logo in seconds, spin up brand guidelines, create a website overnight. Like, the barrier to building stuff has never been lower. And, like, I think that's great. I think we're seeing all sorts of innovations come out. but I think that means the genuine authenticity will be even more rewarded in making connections. But not everyone can make something that feels true.
Yeah.
And the reason why our brand works is because it's authentic to Temporal. We're open source, we're technical, we serve skeptical developers, we solve reliability problems. So that comes through in a lot of our visuals and our comms and where we show up. But you know, our superpowers, our product actually works as promised, and everything flows from that truth, like reliable as gravity. Everything comes from that. So I think just because AI makes it easy doesn't mean you should skip that step.
Sure.
And I think understanding the value you offer and the purpose of your company and why you exist and what you're doing, you got to be really honest and truthful and deep in that if you want to, I think, build a lasting brand.
I think so. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of what you've been doing. There's a lot of truth, reliability, authenticity in everything you guys have been doing. And I think that's shining through, and you can see it every time I was doing the research on the business. You can see it. And that leads me to my last question, which is, what's next for the brand at Temporal Technologies?
I mean, we've just really wrapping up a year of experimentation in our growth and demand gen. And we've done all sorts of campaigns, and we've created all sorts of tremendously performing assets. Now it's like, okay, let's take a look at that. What can we learn and synthesize? And now let's tighten up and rev and level up the brand. We're doing a little bit more work to push up. And, you know, we have tremendous growth ahead of us. We have the scale of people adopting us right now is just gangbusters. So we're trying to stay ahead of the wave, which is very exciting and a lot of work.
Fantastic. Candace, thank you so much for joining me today. It was so great to talk to you about you and your brand. I'm going to watch Temporal Technologies with great interest to see what you guys do next. It's going to be super exciting.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, and I love that you're doing this podcast.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join us next time on The B Word.